nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Welcome, everyone, to the third session of our professional development workshop. In today's session, we're going to be talking about the applications of nanotechnology. And all of these slides should be available on Canvas if you want to refer to them later. So to start out, we're just going to introduce ourselves. I'm Peter Kazarnoff. I presented last week with Muriel, and I'm faculty in engineering technology at Portland Community College in beautiful Portland, Oregon. And I'm also a co-PI on MinTech, the Micro Nanotechnology Education Center. And next, my co-presenter, Jared, is going to introduce himself.
Hi, I'm Jared Ashcroft. I teach chemistry at Pasadena City College. I'm also the PI for the Micro Nanotechnology Education Center. I teach at Pasadena City College, and looking forward to share about nano applications today.
All right, so let's get started with our presentation. So we're going to talk about the applications of nanotechnology, because nano is all around all of us. So first, I'd just like to make sure that you know me and Jared are from MinTech, the Micro Nanotechnology Education Center, and we're going to be talking about applications of nanotechnology in biological realms, and we're going to be talking about applications of nanotechnology for electronics and then for other more common industry types. So anywhere in the world on a typical day, we're using nanotechnology. So this is a slightly older image, but in this image, there's nanotechnology in a number of places. So I'm going to pause for a sec and see if you can look at that image. And if you're willing and able, in the chat, where do you see nano in this image? So where is nano in the picture? So we got some phone lights, clothing in the camera, in the cell phone, in the sign, in the plastic, in the watch. Ooh, somebody has good eyes. They can see the watch, in the medical devices. Ooh, in the bike chain oil. That one's cool. I haven't seen that before. Anywhere else you see nano in that image? In the bike frame. Cool. In the tablecloth. In the fabric backpack, potentially. In the magnetic strip of the credit card. Oh, wow. You could even see there into that wallet and on the sunscreen. Wonder if the sunscreen person has seen this image before. All right. So we're going to move on and see if we got all of those types of nano in this image. So some places we're in the cell phone. Somebody said that. Some places we're in the batteries. Then some places we're in the catalysis. You see that teeny little car in the background that might have nano in the catalyst in its exhaust system. GPS, airbag sensors. Somebody said the sunscreen in the chat. Yes, sunscreen has titanium dioxide nanoparticles in it. In the CCD camera chips, potentially in artificial contact lenses. The GPS exact satellite transceivers. Somebody mentioned the credit cards, those little smart chips in the credit cards. And LED displays and the computers. Probably our computers don't, our laptops at least, don't have as many of these old spinning disks, but the SSDs we have, they do. And somebody in the chat mentioned the bike frame too. So there are applications of nano all around us. And I like to think, which of these applications apply to our students? Which one of these applications can they identify in their lives? So the application areas for nanotechnology include health, medicine, and biology. Jared's going to talk a bunch about that. Also information technology in things like hard disks and microchips, in energy storage and production in things like solar cells and batteries, in material science, in lightweight materials or coatings to make tools last longer, in food, water, and the environment, in things such as filters, and in instruments such as the characterization instruments that you'll learn about next week. And in all these application areas, nanotechnology is a key enabling technology. So Jared's next going to talk with us about applications of nanotechnology in the bio area and medicine, and talk with us about the market impact of nano. So take it away, Jared.
All right. Thanks, Peter. So we always kind of want to start off with the applications of industry-wise, you know, how big is nano? And if you look at it, it's a multi-billion-dollar, multi-hundred-billion-dollar business, probably getting close to about $1 trillion, to be honest with you. In the healthcare technology sector, we're getting about a 9.6% growth from 2017 to 2022, maybe even exacerbated and becoming even more with all of the vaccines and the COVID tests that all have nano-based principles in them. The one thing that I really love about nano is how it really encompasses all science. Like, I'm a chemistry professor, and they always say chemistry is kind of the central science. Nano is very similar in the sense that it has its feet in physics and biology, chemistry, technology, materials, and it really brings all of these different disciplines together. And we're going to talk today and just kind of show you a lot about how there's nano in biology and nano in the engineering. I'll probably be focusing a lot on the health and medicine and biological aspects. Part of the reason why is I went to Rice University, and that's what my graduate work was in, was attaching nanoparticles to biomolecules and using them for medicine and imaging purposes. You know, again, economic impact and jobs creation. You know, there's up to 1 million jobs in the nano sector right now, and trying to fill those jobs with technician students who can just go and work in the nanotechnology lab, PhD students, graduate students who can come up with ideas, work in advanced labs, people with BS degrees. There's basically room for all levels of education in the nanotechnology area. And that's really a big goal of what the micro nanotechnology community is doing. How do we build the bridges between these micro nanotechnology industries and the applications that are available for students and just people to work in, and bridge those to the K-12 students and faculty, bridge them to community colleges, and bridge them to research universities? How can we bring these four different entities together to work as sort of one team in order to build the micro nanotechnology capacity of our schooling and industries together? So kind of some fun stuff. What's not nano? These nano cars, you know, they have the nano Hummer, they have this nano car. I don't know why they call these nano. I mean, it sounds really cool. No, nano is not big, it's very small. I'm a gamer. I like video games, and my son likes video games, and they have Overwatch, and I watch them play Overwatch, and they have these nano boost, and it's just fascinating because you see the word nano all over the place. And part of it is, how do we utilize all of this sort of nano that's out there in a way to maybe talk to students, younger students, about what nano really is? You know, we can use the video game Overwatch and say, well, do you really know what nano is? And do you know what these applications are? And how can we share the applications that are really cool? You know, and then at the same time, bring in the kind of the nuts and bolts of how do you do nanotechnology research and what does nano really entail? So I'm going to show a couple of videos throughout this proposal on different aspects of nano. Here's one that was done by the Massachusetts Institute for Technology. It's kind of their Nano Soldier program.
The nano-enhanced super soldier possesses abilities and tools unsurpassed by any military technology in the world. Nano-reactive muscle propulsion increases jump height by up to 6 times. Anticipatory projectile deceleration predicts and protects against a variety of gunfire. Spasmodic restabilizers snap fractured bones back into place and form an instant cast around the injury. The situational assessment visor goes beyond night and heat vision to identify allies and enemies and mission objectives. Finally, adaptive stealth makes the soldier invisible to all electronic forms of detection and even the human eye.
So that's kind of one application that for nano soldiers, which is interesting. And I've actually seen the video on the stealth suit where they would show it, where you could actually see a you know, something disappear whenever you put the material over it. And I mean, this video is probably about 8 years old now, and I'd be really fascinated to know where that research has gone and how they're actually going to be implementing it over, you know, the next decade or so. So that's kind of an interesting application aspect of it in terms of how we can use it for our military. Now, kind of what I like to focus on a little bit more is the nanotechnology and biology. How do we use it? How does nano and bio kind of fit together? And here's another video that's just sort of a cool sort of introduction or just a kind of a cool simulation on using nanotechnology for cell-specific kind of drug delivery.
Cancer cells isolated from human tumors can be used to help the development of novel cancer therapies. For most drugs to be therapeutically active, they must go inside the cell. Nanoparticles carrying drug payloads can be used to facilitate the drug delivery. Nanoparticles can be targeted to receptors that are overexpressed on the surface of cancer cells. They then enter the cells via a process called endocytosis. Antibody fragments engineered on the nanoparticle bind to the receptors, initiating the internalization process. Inside the cell, clathrin proteins form a cage around the developing endocytic vesicle, which is then cleaved from the cell membrane. Newly formed vesicle carrying the nanoparticle travels further inside the cell, where it is captured and fuses with an early endosome. Inside the acidic endosomal compartment, the nanoparticle degrades, releasing the therapeutic cargo, which induces a controlled death of the cancer cell. Nanoparticle-based drug delivery provides a novel and targeted approach for the future of cancer therapy.
All right, so that's kind of a cool simulation on the targeted cancer therapies. And I'm going to go over kind of some of the design and how we build these type of nanoparticles in the second part of this presentation.
So we've got a question from John, and he says, I've got a mental hurdle considering nano coatings to be durable. Are some nano coatings durable, or are they incredibly fragile?
That's a good question. But by what do you mean coatings? Do you mean what's going to be on the, are you talking about like the nanoparticles whenever they go into the body and they're going to be destroyed too fast so they don't get to the target site?
Just in general, it would be similar to like the never wet coatings, or like with some of the videos we were asked to watch, the application of surface like to absorb light, those types of coatings. Just in general, it was just a general question.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So the majority of nanoparticles that they're going to be using for this type of therapies, usually it's gold nanoshells or gold nanoparticles, or my research was on carbon-based using fullerene and nanotubes. In that case, they're not going to degrade. They're actually designed so that they would make it to the cells before they would degrade. In fact, with the fullerenes, those are very stable in the body. What they've been doing with those is actually putting in some radio immunotherapeutics for radio immunotherapy. And the idea there is that if you have a half-life for, like, say, astatine or some other radio therapeutic, that half-life wouldn't destroy that outside cage and release its energy until it actually got to the cell. So there is research being done that specifically for time released of those radio immunotherapeutics. And the idea there is that part of the reasons that you get really sick with chemotherapeutics is that those drugs attack all healthy cells as well. So the idea is, if we can develop a drug using nanotechnology where you basically chelate in that really toxic drug and it doesn't get released until it gets the cancer cells, maybe there's not as much negative effects for your body whenever for the healthy cells. So there's definitely the degrading for other applications out there, but for medicine, they are trying to design it using particles that are gonna stay viable in the body until they need to do whatever they're supposed to do.
And also, Jared, Latrice asks, is nano safe for cosmetics? Is it potentially harmful when used with other cosmetics and other topical solutions for the body? Is nano dangerous in cosmetics?
Yeah, that's actually a good lead-in. That's our breakout discussion today. Is we're going to have everyone kind of discuss health and safety and environmental impacts of nanotechnology here in a second. So I'm not going to answer that one yet, mainly because I want to get to that discussion and I don't want to influence what the groups discuss. And then we'll talk about kind of environmental health and safety of nanoparticles after that breakout discussion. But it's really an important aspect of nanotechnology is environmental health and safety. There's CBEN, the Center for Biological and Environmental Nanotechnology at Rice University, that does a lot of research in safety and health of nanoparticles and nanotechnology. And then there's METFAS, which is at University of Minnesota. And they're a group that also does a lot of environmental impacts and health of nanoparticles that really aims to figure out, all right, let's make sure that what we're developing is safe so that we're not creating a mess for the future of basically the human race, because we don't want to develop things that are going to, you know, be harmful to us. So we'll talk more about that once the breakout session goes.
And John also asks, can poorly engineered nanoparticles cause cancer?
That's a good question. So there's been research done on like carbon-based nanoparticles that have shown that they're harmful to like fish and stuff like that. But I always relate it to benzene. Like, let's think about benzene, the molecule in chemistry. They used to use it to wash hands. They used to use it for a lot of reasons, and then they found it was carcinogenic. But what happens with benzene is if I start attaching different groups on it, right? If I put an ester or a carboxylic acid, different functional groups, if I water solubilize it, now it's aspirin, right? So I've basically taken something that's carcinogenic, and by manipulating the outsides of it or manipulating this molecule, I've created a medicine that everybody uses. Kind of the same idea for nanotechnology. If we take those fullerene molecules or gold nanoparticles or silver nanoparticles, if we put a lot of that stuff in our body without manipulating the outside of it, then there's a very good chance that that could be toxic for us. Like, you know, you don't really want to put a pure carbon-based molecule in your body like fullerene. How does it get through your system? But if you take that same fullerene molecule and if you attach different groups to it and you water solubilize it, and now you've attached different medicines to it, now you could have a possible medicine. With a caveat to that, that everyone should realize all medicines are toxic to humans, right? Like even aspirin, if you take too much of it, it can kill you. You can overdose on it. You know, the idea with medicine is that we're going to be putting something in our bodies that is a little bit toxic to fight something that's even more toxic and more harmful for us. So I always think of that in terms of medicine is that, you know, we can develop them as safe as we can. That doesn't mean that there can't be negative impacts for some people that interact with them badly. But, you know, to get approval for a drug through FDA in America takes about 20 to 30 years. And usually that the FDA is very good about taking out drugs that are really, really, really negatively impactful to the human body. So I hope that kind of answers that question, but we'll have discussions on it too in the breakout session.
And Jared, just the last quick question. This is from Latrice. Does nano change the properties of medical products for the human body? Can you change the property of a medical product with nanotechnology?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm going to show you some synthesis of some taking Taxol or vancomycin. Taxol is a breast cancer drug and vancomycin is an antibiotic. And, you know, attaching them to a fullerene molecule to be used in targeted drug delivery. So I don't know if they actually change the properties of the vancomycin or the Taxol. And I don't think anyone does because it never got that far into the research. But it's really about utilizing those really unique properties that nanoparticles have so that the nanoparticles are the drugs, as opposed to trying to, change a drug that really works well that we know how to use for the better. We'll talk a little bit about vaccines and stuff here in a little bit, and how nano is used in that specific type of medicine. But you know, kind of the probably based on what the question is, I don't think any research has been done on how it affects other drugs that they use in the body. We're trying to make nanotechnology medicines that are specifically nano-based and not kind of reinventing the wheel of what's already been out there. All right, I'm not going to spend too much time on this side because I think you've probably seen the butterfly wings and the nanobiology. But basically with the butterfly wings, what we have in nano applications is in sensor design. If you kind of look at the SEM image here on the right, these butterfly wings, especially the blue morpho, the reason that they're blue is because of the nanostructures. It isn't pigmentation. Most butterflies, the reason of their color is because of pigments that are in their wings. But the blue morpho butterfly, the reason that you see those really beautiful blue colors is because of the light interaction between these nanostructures that are in the wings. And now people are taking that and kind of doing biomimicry where it's like, how can we mimic what nature does and create sensors that we can use in medicine or in cars or in I think they're making a sound sensor, like a sonic wave sensor based on sort of these nanophotonic principles of the butterfly wings. I know I work with a guy at Caltech who they're developing a sensor that you can embed into an eye, and just by shining light onto that sensor, it would give you information on glaucoma in the eye. And like, is your kind of high levels of whatever chemical is in the eye that's causing the glaucoma. Or for diabetes, you know, whenever you have to take a shot, instead of having to take a shot, maybe you could put one of these nanosensors on you, and just now all you have to do is shine a light on it, and it can give you information, medical information about what your glucose levels is and stuff like that. So that's really where the blue morpho butterfly wing is, I think, kind of the most cool, is in the how do we mimic these light applications of the nanostructures interactions with the light into new nanosensors that we can create to measure quantities of substances in the bodies that could give us information that could help us get better understanding of that diabetes and glaucoma and stuff like that. If anyone is interested, we just submitted a paper that's developed it's really a module that could be used in K-12 community colleges or four-year universities. And basically the idea was starting with biology and natural selection, how does that contribute to the color of the wings? And then looking at physics with the electron movements and the UV spectrometry. And then we have chemistry with the pigmentation and the interaction with different solvents, the refractive index. And then we kind of have the nanotechnology looking at the structures. And we've actually developed kind of a four sequence module that the purpose of it is to show the multidisciplinariness of these butterfly wings and how you could really get a better understanding of why wings are colored how they are. One of the reasons that we did this is we submitted a paper or an abstract to give a talk, one of my students, and a biologist read it, and it was all about the color of these wings. And the biologist said, "You're wrong. Natural selection is why these wings are the blue color." And I really wanted to write back and say, "No, you're wrong. It's not natural selection that's causing these colors. It's these nanostructures in the wings." But I think that that's kind of the misconceptions that we have as biologists, chemistry, physics, in looking at what's causing color and what's causing color in biology sense, what's causing color in chemistry sense, what's causing the color in the physics sense. So if you're interested in reading that paper, you know, send me an email and I can send it to you. All right, so recently, and I think this is where it gets really fascinating, over the last, you know, year, we've had COVID. All the vaccines, or many of the vaccines that are being distributed today, have nanotechnology in them. They're using the nanoparticles basically kind of for the delivery part of it, you know, like putting liposomes or micelles or something. So like wrapping these vaccines with nanoparticle-based molecules that's helping deliver these vaccines to where they're supposed to go. So the COVID vaccines have nanotechnology. And I know there's been some articles out there on, oh, are these nanoparticles causing bad reactions? Are they causing people to get sick? And any kind of drug that we do, any type of molecules that we make is going to have some not good impacts on some people. It isn't going to be huge. It's not going to be where 90% of people have bad reactions to it. But for any kind of new medical technology, we are going to have some certain percent of the population that isn't going to interact or react with that substance very well. So that's part of the studies that people are going to be doing, is how is using this nanotechnology in these vaccines negatively impacting people. You know, there's the positive impact where you get the vaccine and now you're vaccinated from COVID. But is there a big negative impact where people are reacting bad because of the nano-based technology that's in it? I actually think the more interesting one, to be honest with you, is the COVID tests. A lot of the COVID tests now, you know, I've had to do it twice, where you go there and you have to put that, I can't remember what they call it, but they put a big stick up your nose and it feels terrible. Like, it's miserable. The cool thing with this nanotechnology based one is that all you got to do is get some saliva and then you just put it in this solution. And instead of using the PCR test or something like that, now you just need a UV vis spectrometer, you know, something that's going to be measuring the absorbance of those nanoparticles. And based on the interaction that those nanoparticles will have With the COVID, either you're going to get a absorbance or not an absorbance. And based on that number, you'll be able to say, oh yeah, you have COVID or you don't have COVID. It's faster. You don't have to do the nose test. And it's just cheaper, to be honest with you, too, because a UV vis spectrometer and those assays are pretty inexpensive. So it's really fascinating right now that these gold nanoparticles are being used in the COVID testing. And if you're interested in kind of getting more on that, let me know. I can send you kind of the articles that's about how is nanotechnology being used in COVID vaccinations and in monitoring and testing for COVID in people. This is kind of a little bit away from the medicine, but this is the nano spider based on the gecko's feet. There's a video about it.
You know how geckos have these amazing feet that let them climb any sort of surface, including glass? Researchers apply that same technology to gloves that let humans do the same thing. I'm Jen Markham on Buzz 60. Although researchers have been studying gecko feet for years, trying to apply their incredible adhesive abilities to everything from medical devices to robotics. But the van der Waal forces, the way the gecko's toe hairs employ attractive and repulsive forces between molecules, has so far been a challenge to apply on a larger human weight-bearing scale, until now. Researchers at Stanford created hand-sized silicone pads that allowed a 155-pound man to climb a vertical glass wall. Yes, Stanford has built Spider-Man. Well, except for the fact you have to climb very slowly and that there are giant poles between the climber's hands and feet to transfer the adhesion load, all of which pretty nicks any crime-fighting ability. Although DARPA claims the Draper Laboratory also built them similar climbing paddles, there's only this one picture to go by, so I think with the video, I can safely name Stanford the winner here. Buzz 60. Now you know. Pass it on.
All right. Cool. I mean, that's, again, another kind of example of the biomimicry, taking those gecko feet, and they have those really, really small cilia, which you can see at the end of those gecko feet that have the van der Waals forces, and they're all nano-based. I mean, they're all nano-size, but taking that information and then figuring out, oh, how can we use what these geckos do and transfer it to human use and using it, in this case, to climb a building. Very Tom Cruise of them. That guy's a lot better looking than Tom Cruise from behind, I think, though. That's just another fascinating kind of interesting way that we could use nano. Now, honestly, like where the real application for these nano spiders and Gecko Man is in tape. There's some, I think it's called Gecko Tape, that uses the same idea that's very, very strong adhesive. So if you want to look up kind of where they're using this biomimicry the most, it's probably more in tape design than it is building a way that we can climb up buildings, which probably isn't going to happen in the next 10 to 20 years very readily. And probably we don't want people to be having the ability to climb up buildings on their own. That could end up bad, probably. I kind of want to go in and let's bring it back now. Like, all right. We kind of show the cool applications and what we really, really want to do. Now it's like, all right, what can we actually do now? And where are we at with nanotechnology and medicine? So there's different types of nanoparticles, and there's different ways that we can change. And each of them have some advantages and some disadvantages. So what's the different things that we can change on a nanoparticle? We can change the size, right? So we can go anywhere from 1 nanometer to 100 nanometers. And I saw a lot of people saying, oh, well, what about breaking the cell barrier and stuff like that? Typically, anything over 20 nanometers really won't break the cell barrier on its own. So if you have the really, really tiny nanoparticles, like 1 nanometer, 5 nanometers, that's probably a bigger concern than if we're going to be using the bigger nanoparticles that are 100 or 50 nanometers. Those 50 nanometer, 100 nanometers, you really have to have endocytosis or some other mechanism to bring it into the cell. Now, again, if you're going to be using the 1 nanometer particles, then that's probably going to be a concern. What else can we change? The different types of materials. And it keeps growing every year. Whenever I started it, it was all carbon nanotubes and fullerene. So I did all carbon-based nanoparticles. Then we went to metallic nanoparticles. Gold nanoparticles is a really big one because it doesn't seem to have bad negative physiological impacts to us. Whereas silver nanoparticles, they're great antibacterials, but they do have kind of negative impacts in our body. Hydrogels, the dendrimers, these micelles, protein, the conjugates, you know, so a whole bunch of different types of nanoparticles or materials that we can use. You can change their shape, you know, so we can have cube-like, sphere-like, rod-like spheres. It's actually really cool. I mean, the way that you change their shape is really based on intermolecular forces. You know, you put capping agents on them, and based on which capping agent, and capping agents are just either large polymers like PEG, polyethylene glycol, or you could use citrate, which has negative charges. And based on how strong, like citrate has a negative charge. So it's going to be very, very attractive to the nanoparticles. So as they're growing, that really strong negative will push in on it and cause it so it can't grow as fast and it will stay smaller. Whereas if you use PEG, which is more intermolecular forces like van der Waals forces or dispersion forces, it's not going to hold that nanoparticle as tightly. And so it's going to allow growth to occur at a faster rate, and it can get bigger particles. So you can very easily control the shape and the size of it just based on what type of surfactant that you put in the solution as you're growing these particles. The other thing that we can changes the surface. You know, we could put hydrophilic groups, hydrophobic groups, we can put peptides, we can put antibodies, we can put different functional groups. And that's really important because I think of benzene, right? Like benzene they used to use it to wash hands to get kind of oil and stuff off until they found out that it causes cancer. So the benzene ring, you know, just that C6H6 is cancerous. You put an ester group and a carboxylic acid groups, those are organic functional groups that have water solubilizing OHs. Now it's aspirin, right? So if I just put things on the outside of a molecule that could cause cancer, and if I make it water soluble, now it could be used for a drug much more easily, and it's much more easy to get out of the body, right? Any drug that you use and you put into the body, there's really three things that you want. Does that drug work? You know, is it going to fight whatever disease that it's going to attack? Two, can you target it to a specific area? You know, can we do targeted therapy? And then three, how do we get it out of the body? Like, you don't want those drugs to stay in the body. That's what makes it really toxic and gets you very sick. And the way to get it out of the body is to put alcohol groups on it, OH groups, solubilize it in water. And that way, theoretically, the drug will go find that spot that it needs to do the medicine to. And then once it's done, it's going to just be excreted out of the body in the urine. And so that's what we can do with nanoparticles, is we can put water solubilizing groups on the outside so that the gold and the silver won't stay in your body once it does its work. So here's our inorganic nanoparticles. The cool thing kind of about gold is it's not gold at the nanoscale. It could be anywhere from red to purple, depending on the size. And again, that's one cool thing, is that we can change electronic properties and light properties just based on the size of the molecules. And now you can do different kind of studies or different type of applications based just on size. Again, we can attach drug carriers, fluorescence imaging, gene delivery, antigen agents, all on the outside of these gold nanoparticles. And again, you could change the size very easily. Here's some rods, here's some more smaller rods, a little bit different shapes. You can also add external molecules onto nanoparticles. So this is my research was all on fullerene, which is C60. Just think of a soccer ball of carbon. This is probably one of the first really people got excited about drugs for fullerene. It was the C3 molecule. Basically, all they did is put three different functional groups or three different attachments on the outside of the fullerene. Each of them had this carboxylic acid. So if you see COOH, that's just a carboxylic acid functional group. One, it water solubilizes it, so now it can go into the body. But interestingly, the C3 drug, they put it in rats, and the rats ended up living about 6 months longer than rats that didn't use this. And so they thought it'd be used as sort of an anti-aging drug. It's a great antioxidant. So it's a radical scavenger, which means that radicals in your body are basically
electrons that are by themselves. They're just floating around without another pair of electrons. They're very high energy and really bad for us. That's what antioxidants do. Antioxidants basically go and eat up these electrons that are just floating by themselves. And the C3 drug was one of the best radical scavengers they've ever found. It would really go in and just eat up those lone electron pairs. And those radicals basically get through the blood-brain barrier. That's what causes Alzheimer's, neurological diseases, and that kind of disease. So they thought that this drug would, you know, miracle drug for this disease. And then it turned out to work really great in rats and mice, and it didn't work so well in humans. So it never came onto the market. But that was kind of one of the first nano-based drugs that people got really excited about. We could also take and attach organically using organic chemistry and attach drugs to the outside of this fullerene molecule. So here we made a fullerene Taxol conjugate, Taxol here at the end, which is a anti-cancer drug. Another thing that would be really fascinating is if not only putting the drug on there, we then put a bioconjugate. So we take antibodies, you know, so we can take and organically do some organic chemistry and attach using these cross-linkers, right? This is what EDC is. EDC is just a cross-linking agent to where now we could attach the gold nanoparticle or silver. I'll talk about that in a second. This is a silver-gold hybrid nanoparticle. And we use that cross-linker to end up attaching it to an antibody. And this is kind of like the symbol for an antibody where you see the kind of the Y-shaped. This picture shows this silver with gold around it because one of the projects that I'm working on right now is silver shows the best antibacterial behavior for nanoparticles, but it's more toxic than gold. Gold doesn't show the toxicity, but it doesn't have as good of medicine purposes. So what we're doing now is we're actually making silver gold hybrids where you put the silver in the middle and you wrap it, the gold around it as a sphere. And then we're going to try and use these silver gold hybrids as the medicine, as opposed to silver or gold by themselves, hoping that we get the silver bacterial, antibacterial properties, along with the gold, not as toxic for our body properties. And they kind of work together very well. So this is something that we can do. We can make nanoparticle bioconjugates, and this is pretty well-known process now. So I was one of the first ones that made a conjugate like this. This was my PhD thesis was this project on the right. I took the fullerene molecule. We attached down at the bottom, you see, this is called serinol. And the whole reason that we put this serinol on here is all these alcohol groups, the OHs that you see, that water solubilizes this molecule and makes it so it's a lot easier to work in a biological setting. And then we use this chemical reaction and we use this compound called SPDP and we linked the fullerene molecule to the antibody. And the idea here is now the antibody can go and find that cancer cell. We worked with MD Anderson Cancer Center to do this. That active site will find that cancer cell, and then it can pull in the nanoparticle so that you can get that cell-specific delivery of whatever drug that you have. Perfect scenario would be then we would put inside of this fullerene a radioimmunotherapeutic, like astatine or holmium or something that they use in chemotherapy, but with radiation. And by putting it inside that fullerene, whenever you initially give the drug, the energy wouldn't be enough to release that radiation outside of the fullerene shell. And then the antibody would have sort of a, you know, it would take maybe 2, 3, 4 hours to find the cell. And that would be about the same half-life for the radioimmunotherapeutic so that we would release the most energy and radiation to the cancer cells at that one time once the antibody found that cell. And try and make it so, one, you don't have as much leaking to healthy cells as possible, but also as much cancer-specific radiation fighting that we possibly can. Unfortunately, that sounds way too complex, and you're right. It probably is way too complex. Unfortunately, because I have a patent on this, it's if it ever worked out, I could have been a rich person. And but that's how it is. So we do have kind of cell specific drug delivery, and I'm going to kind of show this slide I'm not going to show this because I don't think we have time. I want to get to Peter. This is a nano drug delivery simulation. If you do want, you can get access to this, and it really kind of shows how it works very well. The other aspect of it, which is down here at the bottom, not just for medicines, but for imaging purposes. Gadolinium, if you've ever had an MRI or a CT scan, they use gadolinium-based contrast agents. And they use what's gadolinium DTPA. That's what's used now. The problem is that gadolinium is very toxic for us. Like it makes you sick. And in some cases, it kills people. The idea with these nanoparticles is if we put the gadolinium inside this cage, it wouldn't leak to the healthy cells. So it would make it safer. But another benefit, and you can see here, is that if you look at the contrast the gadolinium nanoparticle one makes, it is far superior to the contrast that the drug on the market is right now. It just glows better. And now you could see and you could find and detect the cancer at an earlier stage. And that's probably the big key in cancer therapies. You know, there's no way to cure cancer. You can only get it in remission. But the sooner you catch it and find it, the better chance you have at getting it into remission and living a longer life. So these gadolinium-based nanoparticles, because of just their properties, contrast properties, would be a huge benefit to kind of imaging for that kind of medicine. I always like to end with this. You know, this is a lot of the students that work with me and just show, like, I always like to say, you know, the reason that we do the research, the reason that we're working in this field is really to get students involved and to get them to know what nanotechnology is. So if you have any questions about the center or about any of these projects, please, you know, contact me, contact Micro Nanotechnology, and we can see how we can work with you.
Jared, we got a question in the chat before we move on.
Yeah.
From Angel, is there a concern about different nanoparticles unexpectedly bonding with other types of particles already present in the body?
I think with any medicine, there's always those concerns. Like, you're always going to be concerned about any new medicine. How is it going to interact in the body? Is it going to destroy your DNA? Is it going to destroy proteins it's not supposed to? And that's why you're going to have, right now, there isn't really any nanotechnology-based drugs out there that I'm aware of, mainly because you've got to do the studies on them and make sure that they're safe. Maybe there's some that other people know of. I don't know of any that are currently being used. And probably the reason why is because they are trying to do a lot of those studies and figure out, all right, what proteins, what DNA, what other molecules that's in your body are these nanoparticles affecting? And let's make sure they're as safe as possible before we implement them into medicine, on a large scale. I think Paul's here. Paul probably knows even more than me, like, what kind of nanoparticles or if there are any nano-based medicines currently being used.
Well, the most famous one is the COVID-19 vaccine.
Yeah, there's the vaccine.
That's a PEG nanoparticle wrapping up an mRNA molecule, which enters some miraculous way into cells and causes your cells to make spike proteins, and then your body makes antibodies to the spike proteins. So that's one technology where nanoparticles are being used.
Yeah.
I think there are some cancer treatments that are using nanoparticles as well.
Yeah, it's just not very prevalent. And the vaccine is the first one that I've actually really, really aware of. I'll be interesting to see in the next 5 years, 10 years, because my research started in 2000. And if you take, you know, 30 years to get kind of these things onto the market, we're kind of getting at that 2025, 2030, where we might start seeing a lot of the technology that was first thought up of in, you know, early 2000s coming maybe to fruition in the next 5 or 10 years. And I think the vaccine's a good example of, all right, look, if they really wanted to, they could probably get some of this applications out a lot quicker than maybe quicker than what we wanted to, because it just hasn't been studied as much.
you've got to point out that the vaccine technology isn't as rapid as people make it out to be. It's been tested before, and that's why people, why everybody knew it was going to work. It's just a few different technologies coming together.
Yeah. But thanks for the question. All right. So now Peter is going to do nanotechnology in automobiles.
Thanks, Jared. And I think we're having a great dynamic discussion. So please keep asking questions in the chat. And we're going to have another breakout session, too. So I'm just going to introduce two different applications where nanotechnology is used. This is in automobiles and phones. And I want you to think about what kind of applications would your students identify with and what kind of applications would be equitable so that we're bringing in as many students as possible. So this is a Toyota minivan. It looks just like the one that's in my garage. And there's nanotechnology in the windshield. There is research in nanotechnology in the tires and nanotechnology in the lights. And so in the windshield of the cars, you could potentially put a product on called Rain-X. And Rain-X has two different functional groups at the different ends. The head group attaches to the windshield, and then that top functional group that shows R, that's a hydrophobic group. And so in the picture, you can see on the left-hand side, the windshield treated with Rain-X, and on the right-hand side, all of the water spreading out. So maybe your students could identify with that. There is some research now of using carbon nanotubes to replace carbon black in tires. Carbon black is a reinforcing agent that's added to the rubber. And there's some research now in using other allotropes of carbon, like carbon nanotubes in tires. And then another place that nanotechnology is used in cars is in the lights. More and more cars now have light-emitting diodes to run their lights rather than incandescent bulbs. And light-emitting diodes use stacks of inorganic materials that are nanometers thick in order to produce light. So the next application that your students might identify with could be nanotechnology in electronics, and in specifically in cell phones. So there's nano in your phone, there's nano in the screen, there's nano in the processor in the phone, and there's nano in the memory in the phone where you store all those great pictures. So a screen in a cell phone is made up of transparent layers. And in some of those transparent layers, we have nanoscale thick transparent conductors. And one of those materials is called ITO, indium tin oxide. And so if your students are playing with a phone, their fingers, they're interacting with nano. Another place that nano is in the phone is in the processors. Modern processors use FinFET technology. And on the middle here, there's a diagram that kind of shows how that works with the source drain and gate electrodes. And on the right-hand side is an SEM image. I believe this is one of Intel's FinFET technologies. So there's nanotechnology in the processor in your phone. And another place that there's nanotechnology is in the memory of your phone. Modern memory is actually three-dimensional in structure. Think of it sort of like a big skyscraper of memory. And each one of the floors has got a bunch of different rooms or cubicles that you could store information on. And those things are at the nanoscale. So thank you. Please keep in touch. Use the Teach Nano hashtag on Twitter. And Jared's email is here. And my email is below that. So please feel free to reach out to us over email. Last week, someone reached out over email and we got them some resources. They were starting a nano course coming up, and that was pretty exciting.